Good morning, Rabbi Isai. So we had an introduction earlier this week to various reasons why Machzis HaShekel, Parshas Shkolim being next week, not this Shabbos, but next Shabbos. And I thought we'd look a little bit maybe at the Haftorah of Parshas Shkolim. We all know the Kriya of Parshas Shkolim, which was that L'chapa al nafsho yiseichem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the mitzvah Machzis HaShekel. Everybody, every adult male, brought a Machzis HaShekel for the expenses of the Beis HaMikdash, the korbanos and the repair, half a shekel a year. And we all know the, we've discussed in previous years what was done with it, etc. So that's Parshas Shkolim. Now the Haftorah is always a reflection of the last Parsha that we liked. So we don't only read Parshas Shkolim, but the Haftorah, which is taken from the Nevi'im, also reflects an inyan which has a connection with Parshas Shkolim. It's the last thing that we learn. Therefore, the Haftorah doesn't have the connection with Parshas Mishpotim, which we'll learn. It has the connection with Parshas Shkolim, which is the last thing that we learned just before the Haftorah. This is the special occasion today, and the Haftorah has to do with that. The Haftorah, as we know, comes from Nevi'im. All the Haftorahs come from the Sforim of the Nevi'im. And the Chazal were Mesaken, the Inyan of Haftorah, at a time when they weren't allowed to learn from the Torah. And therefore, they introduced Haftorah, that we should read a Parsha which in Nevi'im, which has a connection with the Kriyas HaTorah that we've just learned. And generally speaking, because it was a substitute for the lining, in a regular lining on a Shabbos, we have seven aliyahs, minimum three psukim. And therefore, in an ideal world, the Haftorah would always have at least 21 psukim, because it would reflect the fact that there were at least 21 psukim in Kriyas HaTorah, three psukim per seven aliyahs. So therefore, most Haftorahs, or many Haftorahs, have at least 21 psukim in them. There are some where the Inyan is a complete Inyan, where it has less than 21 psukim. Interestingly, in Parshas Shkolim, the Parsha that we want to discuss in the Haftorah to do with Shkolim has 17 psukim, and therefore the Parsha that the Ashkenazim read is 17 psukim long. So our Haftorah is 17 psukim long. It's not the full 21, if you like, but it is a complete inyan to discuss the inyan of the Shkolim in the Beis HaMikdosh, which we'll come to later when we discuss the content of the Haftorah. The Sfardim start four psukim earlier. And the Sfardim start four psukim earlier, that gives them a full complement of 21 psukim. We have 17, but they start off, Kamaschinam Asfardim, they start off, this is from, it's from Melochim Beis, Perek Yud Aleph, and they start off what we call Vayichrois Yehoyodo Es Abris, and we start off from Ben Sheva Shonim Yehoyash B'molchoi. So we have 17 psukim, they have 21 psukim. Now, what?
The
Inyan of 21 is because the Haftorah replaced Kriyas HaTorah, and a regular Kriyas HaTorah is seven aliyahs of a minimum of three psukim. So therefore, lechatchila, the Haftorah should have 21 psukim. So therefore, they make up the full complement of the 21 psukim, but that means that their four psukim are a historical introduction to the parsha of Shkolim that comes up in the Haftorah. So let's discuss the historical introduction, because it's a fascinating story. We know that after the death of Shlomo HaMelech, Eretz Yisrael was divided up into two kingdoms. There was the northern kingdom, the kingdom of, in English they call it the kingdom of Samaria, the kingdom of Shomron, the kingdom Malchei Yisrael they call it. That was the northern kingdom, and that was the ten tribes, and the southern kingdom was Malchus Yehuda. And that included only Yehuda and Binyamin, two tribes. And it included Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdosh. So they were divided into two, and there were two lines of kings. Right? In Malchus Yehuda, they had a hereditary line of kings from Yehuda. And that continued throughout Yehuda, except what we're going to discuss either today or on Sunday, that there was an exception. But besides that, the Melochim came from Yehuda, and Yaakov Avinu said, Lo Yoso Shevet Mi Yehuda, that kings of Eretz Yisrael, the kings of the Bnei Yisrael, should be from Yehuda. But the breakaway kingdom, which was the ten Shavuotim, who broke away at the time after the death of Shlomo HaMelech, and the first king was Yerovam ben Nevat. Yerovam ben Nevat came from Shevet Ephraim, and the kings afterwards came from different Shavuotim. They were not Malchei Yehuda. They were not really, I don't know whether you could call them, but in Melochim they're called kings. So they were the kings of the northern kingdom. They were the kings of the northern kingdom. And the eighth of the Norman of the kingdom of the kings of the Norman kingdom was Achav. Achav HaMelech Ahab. Achav HaMelech was a Rosha, Ein Lechelet Lelem Abo. He destroyed the Avodah. He didn't allow the Bnei Yisrael to go to be Oyle Regal, to go to Yerushalayim, and he encouraged service of Baal, of idol worship throughout the kingdom. He was married to a lovely lady who came from Tsur, from Tyre. She was a Phoenician, and I don't even know whether she actually converted. Her name was Izebel, and she was as much of a Roshanta as he was a Rosha. And she spread she came with her Avodas Habal. Do we have a speaker? Yeah, she came and she spread and she promoted, together with her husband Achav, the service of Baal, the service of Avodah Zorah. Now, Achav and Izebel, this lovely couple, they had a daughter. They had other children, but they had a daughter. Her name was Asalio. Their daughter was Asalio, and they decided at that time that it would be a good thing as an alliance between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, between Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda, that Atalia, their daughter, should marry the king of Yehuda. The king of Yehuda was Yehoram, and Yehoram married Asalio. So now we've got the king of Yehuda married to the daughter of Achav and Izebel of Yisrael. And between them, they had children. Between them, they had children. And their son was known as Achazio. Their son was known as Achazio. Achazio, unfortunately, only reigned for 1 year, and then he was killed in battle. He was married to somebody called Tzivio Mibe'eshova, and they had a number of children. So Achazio, yeah, so now Asalio has a grandchild, a number of grandchildren, by her son Achazio. Achazio the Melech Yisrael, and Asalio was the queen of Yehoram. Yehoram died, Achazio became king, and she's got grandchildren. Asalio has grandchildren who, unfortunately, their father just died. Achazio the Melech had died. And the children were the next in line to become the next kings of Malchus Yisrael. Asalia herself decided that she was going to kill all the heirs to the throne. She was going to destroy the Malchus, the line of Malchus from which she came. In other words, her children. That means she was married to Yehoram. Yehoram had. They had Achazio. Asalia's son was Achazio. He'd been killed in battle. He had grandchildren. She killed her grandchildren. She killed everybody who could possibly be an heir to the throne. In order that, she then appointed herself as the queen of Yisrael. As she became queen for 8 years. She became the queen of Malchus Yisrael. Yeah, and she, as long as the army was loyal to her, she controlled what's called the Kohanim were opposed to her, the Rabbonim were opposed to her, everybody was opposed, but she ruled with an iron hand for 7 years. Unbeknown to her, one of the children of Achazio, his name was Yehoyosh, was a baby, and she thought that she destroyed all her grandchildren, she thought she destroyed all the heirs to the throne, but Yehoyosh was saved by actually Asalia's daughter. Atalia had a daughter called Yehosheva. Not a name that's very common, although my brother in Toronto has a granddaughter called Yehosheva. But Yehosheva, the sister of Achazio, the sister of the king who died, saved the baby Yehoyosh. And she brought him to the Beis HaMikdosh, and she brought him to Yehoyada HaKohen. And Yehoyada HaKohen hid this baby in the Beis HaMikdosh. The Rebbe's ready? Okay. Okay, I don't want to stop.
No, please, please.
Right? It's a great story. Later, yeah, we'll carry on later because there's more to it. It's very, very interesting. We'll carry on later on Sunday with the story of the Haftorah of Parshas Shkolim.
Started the Torah in Northwest London Friday, Yud Teshvat, 6th of February. The Admiral by Ditchka, Marina Rav Zalman, Rot Shlita, Luchos, round or square. This week's Torah, where has been sponsored anonymously, but in Nishmas, our esteemed founder of Yosef Do, Ben, with Shimon's feet, Michal, Itzkrit, Zuchra, Nole, Brocho.
Good
morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So this week's Parsha, the major theme of the Parsha is Kabbalah Satoria. And the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu received Shnai Lichos Evan, two tablets of stone. Now the truth is that in the Torah there's not much more detail given about the Luchos. They're always referred to as Luchos Evan, tablets of stone. But Chazal describe it a bit more. And the Gemara says, in Baba Basra Daf Yudalet, and the Luchos are Konsheshu, the length of the luchos was 6, the rochbon and their width, shishu also 6 tfochim, the avion and the thickness, shlosho, 3 tfochim. So according to the Bavli, the way we assume now, every luach is a square with depth which is half of the size of the square, so 6 by 6 by 3, and amma by amma, the depth of a half amma. If you then take the two luchos together back to back, you end up with a perfect cube. 6 by 6 by 6. Parenthetically, I'll say, Chazal say it was a nes that Moshe held the luchos, because Chazal say elsewhere, the luchos were not made of stone, they were made of sapphire, and some have tried to identify the specific sapphire, but if you think about the weight of a sapphire and the size of approximately, Reb Chaim Noah, a half a meter by a half a meter by a half a meter, according to Chazanish, 60 centimeters by 60 centimeters by 60 centimeters, it weighs somewhere between 500 and 1,000 kilo. So you can see why it would be impossible for a person to hold in his hands these two luchos. It's an S. Tosfos HaMenuchot of Tzadik Tes says, according to the Yerushalmi, 6 by 6 was the two luchos together. So in reality, each luach was the height of 6, there's no disputing that, the width of 3, depth of 3. If you put the two together, you get a square, not a cube. You get a square of 6 by 6, deep 3 tefachim. However, regardless, it seems to be that the Gemara says it was in a square shape, either two rectangulars or two squares, but certainly square. Now, I cannot see for the moment now, but from memory, the luchos, which are painted up here on the Urna Kodesh, have a round top. Like most shuls, they're rounded, and that's the obvious question. If there's a beferish shigemurim b'basad afidalet, it tells us that the luchos were cube, rectangular, square, depending on how we interpret the specific of the gemurim. Where does the idea of a rounded luchos come from?
It's not an artist thing.
Certainly, it's an artist depiction, and we cannot necessarily bring a raya from that alone because the Orech Chaim HaKodesh was printed during the lifetime of the Orech Chaim HaKodesh himself. And Moshe Rabbeinu is depicted on the Shar Blat holding round luchos. But he's also in the same picture depicted with Ari Yarmulke and with two horns from his head, like Michelangelo's famous sculpture, based on the Vulgate's interpretation of Kekorin Arpunov, that Moshe had horns coming out of his head. So in this, I certainly believe the Orech Chaim HaKodesh did not approve the picture of Moshe Kapalus and with horns in his head. Consequently, we can take very little comfort from the fact that so many Gedol Yisrael had on the Shar Blat of the Sfurim the artistry of a luach which was rounded on the top. As to why the Orech Chaim HaKodesh allowed that, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe they saw this as art, which is not related to the Sefer. In the same way as a Gedol Yisrael, I would like to believe, doesn't get involved in the particular topography of the Sefer or in the fonts being used. They saw it as a similar thing. It's visual, it's nice, it's meaningless. So where does it come from? Now the truth is, it is not only the Gemurim Bubasa Daf Yudalet, but also we find the Zohar Kodesh, Rebbe says, V'halichos ksiv, it luchos says, without a vav, like lachas, chad, as if be one. Teihav, it was two. It was chaz and chad, but when you put them together, it looks completely like one. This cannot be said if the shapes were round. It makes perfect sense. Either it forms a perfect cube or a perfect square. You can see, you put them together, it's lachas. It looks like one, even though it's two, but two which form into one. That cannot be said if it is actually round. Now, the truth is that inasmuch as the roundness comes from Goyish sources, it's something which for us, for Yidden living in England, we should be particularly sensitive to it, because the first example of a yellow star, but wasn't a yellow star, comes here in England. King Henry III had there's a rule which he put into place. Every Jew must carry on his upper clothing at all times, whether he walks or rides, in the town or out of it, two tablets made of cloth or parchment, rounded on the top. Interesting. His son, King Edward I, which famously ultimately expelled the Yidden from England in 1290, he claimed not going to help in the Minik, so he was Mesakan, that every child from the age 7 onwards must wear the pre-mentioned cloth symbol in two tablets, 6 fingers he writes by 3 fingers, seemingly according to the Chetm of the Gemurah, according to the Hippaskans like Tosis and Menuchas, that it wasn't 6 by 6, but rather each individual was 6 by 3, and together they're 6 by 6, again rounded on top. So it not only does it seem that there's no Makor Chazal for it, but it's actually something which, especially for us English Eden, reminds us of some very dark period in our history, almost 750 years ago, where this was a symbol Yid had to wear. Now, of course, we as Yidden always own these symbols, like the Strammel and everything else. If you want to embarrass us with it, what we do, we say with this, we'll turn it into a point of pride. But why? Why the round the top? So I'm sure many of you heard over the years, the Lubavitcher Rebbe took this as a mission, and one of his Tamidim formed this, the Chet HaEgel, not Chet HaEgel, but Chet HaEgel, this additional circle, which doesn't come from Chazal at all. And he worked hard in the entire world to spread the idea that we have to have the symbols of the luchos, like Chazal tell us, square or rectangular, as mentioned before. Interestingly, the Stipler similarly writes that he sees no reason for this, for the shape of the circle, and wherever he could, he changed it. Reb Chaim Kanievsky was once asked, why is it in the Lederman, on the Peruches, there's a picture of the luchos with the eagle, and he said, Lo shalu oto, no one asked him. Which goes back to my previous point. All the examples we see from artistry over the years, who says they asked them at all? So, sof kol sof, how we melamed tzchis minig Yisroel? So, ken zeh nazoi. Firstly, we find a source in the Zohar. It's hard to say if it means literal, but let's hear what it says. Zohar Kodesh says like this. The luchos came from the Tal Elyon. It's rochnis from the Shomayim. When it came down to this world, nikpu, like droplets, they froze in place. So we can sort of imagine the idea that the picture that we have of the rounded top comes from the, like, almost like frozen, came down in a shemaim like droplets of water. And like if you think of a droplet, how when it comes down, it forms like a shape of a circle at the bottom. This is what happened to the luchos. This is an idea which we find in the Zohar HaKodesh in Parshas Yisrael. However, we actually have a Shivil Alocha. There's a very famous cipher. When I was younger, we're still around. Today, there are many more sophisticated forum. It's called Hamasiris. It used to be the standard text that teach children alabes in Chayder. The cipher Hamasiris had on its cover, and still has till this day, the picture of the Luchos rounded. The Mechaba of the cipher was asked, why is it in this shape? It's against the Gemur. The Gemur tells us it should actually be in the shape of a square. So he writes to Yankee Fisher. And he answers him, Masha Shua Malas Kavodai, Shiyutsu Oirin. People came up with complaints, Asaifa Mesoiris, Shemitzai Salichot Betsura Agula. And the Gemara said, the Mabasid, it was queer. So he says, I don't understand why they have Tanis and you. Many shuls have the same thing. But now he comes to the point itself. And he says, an interesting Tana. There's a famous Yerushalmi in the 6th parak of Shvius and in the 5th parak of Nadurim. I'm Meribu. Nothing was created square. Look in creation, there are no squares. Natural squares don't exist in creation. The Mishnah tells us, luchos were one of the things which were created by Erev Shabbos by Nashmushes. So how can it be square? anything which was created, but masa bereishis, there's no square shape.
Square or exactly straight?
That's a good point. So one of the reasons of the Lubavitcher Rebbe is that the Meriba means completely square. And because the lichos were chukik, they were cut into it, that's not a full square. But Pashas means a rectangular shape or square shape, basically right angles. There are no right angles, 90 degree angles in creation. It doesn't exist. So this is one Tanya, yes. Then there's another Tanya. And this Tanya is Be'etzem in the Shiva of...
Therefore,
how could it be? If the Luchos were created by the Masa Bereishis, Be'eshaz Be'nashmushes, how could it be square? Nothing was created square. Nothing. So the Shami says it in two examples. And so now we have a theory. We tell us on the one hand, you tell me that the Luchos was square. And Masa Bereishis, Shami says otherwise. So Be'echrech, the Gemur is not saying it was square. The Gemur is giving us the size of it. It was 6x6, but it was rounded. But it wasn't necessarily that all the angles were right angled. It's the overall size of it. In the same as you describe things which are not perfect, you'll still give the height and the length as the width. You wouldn't necessarily specify where the corners go in. In Mamayla, this is the Yishami of 6x6 is not a steer because Behechrich, it cannot be square. That's not possible.
Mishkan and Aron, everything was square.
No, because they were human made. You can take a piece of wood and cut it into a square shape. But the luchos were not. The luchos were made, created in this form in Eshad Panash Moshes, like the Shemur was created and like the Pios was created. They were creation. In creation, there's no right angles.
But Monashach, then, every corner would have to be round. Yeah, according to that, you wouldn't have any square corners. And if you're going to have, if you're going to say that a tiny bit of roundness doesn't matter, then you do the same at the top. You don't get a big curve.
So I get the point. So the Pashas, we'll see in a moment, so Yaakov Isher does seem to hold that indeed all corners are rounded, not only the top. As to why we have the shape, we'll come to in a moment. I will, yes?
So what about, the second luchos were hewn by Moshe. So can we say the first ones were created by Hashem and creation was square, and maybe the second ones weren't square?
Exactly, and that Teretz is brought by several sources, that indeed the first one was completely rounded, the second luchos were completely square, and when the Gemara talks in Bava Basra about the shape of the luchos, the first one was rounded, the first one Hashem made, and that's why it's rounded, because in creation there's no square. When Moshe made the second luchos, they were all square. The Gemara Basa talks about how you shape the luchos into the Oren. That of course refers to the second luchos, which we had with us. Now we go to what you said, Bianchi. Says Rabbi Yaakov Fisher, maybe the luchos and the Oren are a combination of the two. The upper part are the part which represent the luchos as we got them from the Hashem. And the bottom part, which in the first luchos were completely rounded, represent the second luchos. So our luchos are hybrid luchos, representing both the old and the new. Now, why is this important? Because the Gemara says in Bava Basra, the cheshbon of the shape of the oren vis-a-vis the luchos. The Gemara explains that you had, it's a longer sugya, it's kedai to look at it, it's interesting. You had a sefer Torah in the oren together with the luchos. And we have to know how it fits. Rabbi Yehuda says that every Am is a 5 tvachim, Rabbi says 6 tvachim. Going to Rabbi, you had to have a shelf outside to put the Sefer Torah, it doesn't fit in. But the Gemara says this, there were 2 tvachim left on top. Why? Lehoitzi lehachin is a Sefer Torah. You cannot put into a box things to fit perfectly, because otherwise you have no place to put things in out. But, if it is true that the luchos were rounded, what is the problem? You have a space to put in. Think of it this way. The top of the 6 tefachim doesn't necessarily fill the whole oren. You have a corner where you can take the Sefer Torah in and out. So for the Gemara is clearly mashma that the luchos filled them so perfectly that unless we had a space above the luchos and the Sefer Torah, there was no way to take things in and out of the oren at all. But if, as we say now, that the Gemara refers to the second luchos, which were indeed made by Moshe Rabbeinu completely square, it makes sense. Were it to be the first luchos, it wouldn't have a problem. They would tack around it.
When do you ever have to be moitzi, though?
The Sefer Torah.
You drop them in.
Right, but Sefer Torah has to come in and out. Sefer Torah, the Gemara says, this is the Gemara's version. Pinas to ulin or kutzapas to ochel ochboi, nishtai shem shnai tvochum, shloi ha Sefer Torah nichas v'yosuk shidochuk. When you take it in and out, it's impossible to pull it out. So you have to have the potential opportunity to take it out, the Sefer Torah, and that's which Moshe gave us, the one that Hashem gave up with the Moshe Rabbeinu with that, and you need to have two tefachim. So why is the Gemara bother by having two tefachim on top when Be'etzem you have a rounded corner to take it out? Clearly there's no rounded corner. And hence why it only stims if you hold the fully square, which would be a steer to the idea of the luchos being rounded, unless we say that there's a difference between the first and the second. Once we're talking about this idea, so the emphasis is that the Medrash tells us that the luchos, when they were given over, in luchos were set with six tefachim. Hashem, so to speak, held on to the top two tefachim. Moshe held on to the bottom two tefachim, and the two middle tefachim are kept vacant in the middle. This is a part of a deeper idea that the Torah is always, there's more for us to do. Rekiva Eiger writes, and the same idea appears in Sefer Or Yitzchok from Yitzchok Radweller, B'Shem Deva Hashem Tov, Torah Hashem Timimu. What is a Timimu? Tumim usually means when you have a carbon, it has no, it's perfect, it's whole. The Torah is completely whole. We barely scratched the surface. After 3,500 years of Torah, we haven't even opened up the cellophane. So there's these two tefachim which are available, which you haven't, no one touched it, you can still go into it. But according to what we said now, it makes sense. The two bottom tefachim represent the luchos that Moshe made, the two top luchos represent the Hashem's luchos, and this is how we end up with a hybrid shape of the luchos. But we still have a problem. Because if we're going to say, Taka, that the luchos were all, the pashas ha-gemura, that all the luchos were square, what do we do with the kasha of Sianka Fisher to the Nekida of the Yerushalmi says there's no Meribah B'masa B'Rashas. So there are four Tiritzim on this Kasha. The first is, the Maskun of the Yerushalmi is that this is only B'Brios. There are no living creations. Biologically, nothing is actually square. And this is a good Tiritz because today we have found numerous crystals which are square in nature. There are. They're sometimes microscopic and sometimes a bit bigger, but there are square crystals which form naturally. But the Yishamah's maskun is only bebrius. There's no biological animal that is shaped in the square. So there's no shaykhis to the question of the luchos. The luchos was sapphire. They could have been square. The second hasbir is that it's quite possible that the Bavli is cholik on the Yishami. We find this only in the Yishami. The Bavli tells us it was 6x6 or 6x3, and therefore it's nishkan kasha b'chlal. The third tariq you mentioned before, which is to say that Meribah means completely square, not only right angles, and being that this was cut through in the stone, it's not called a Meribah. And the first term, which is interesting, is, what does the Yerushalmi say? I am Meribah Mishachis my Birashis. When was the Luchos created? Bebana Shmushis. That's not considered part of Masa Birashis. Proven by the mere fact that the Mishnah says, all this was created in creation, and then these 10 things were done, Erev Shas Bebana Shmushis, in the time which is like in the twilight zone, the in-between. Rabbi Menashe Klein has a tshuva in Chalit Tetzuv of Sefer Mishnah Luchos in Semekiv Samachtes, and he says an interesting gedank. He says there's a well-known question, likewise on the menorah, that all the menorahs come out in Klal Yisrael and the shuls through the years are always put forward as sort of a semicircle, which is each corner goes around like in a 90 degree circle as part of a wider circle, and yet. The Rambam writes and others write that all the Kanim were all done by Alachsoin, straight up. So he said the Emes says all this can be answered like this, because we know that there's an Isser to make things in the way they were in the Beis Hamikdash. And because of that, whenever we copy a Keli of the Beis Hamikdash, what we do is we make it a little bit different, dafka to be different. So the reason why the Luchos are made in the shape they made with the round is because the Luchos were not that shape. If we wanted to copy the luchos, we can make them square. But we don't do things that digmas hamikdash. We always make it slightly different. The menorah is slightly different. Itaka wasn't this way in the Beis Hamikdash. The luchos are slightly different. The taka wasn't this way in the Beis Hamikdash.
Change dimensions.
What do you say?
Change the dimensions. Make them shorter.
Kenzan, but remember that the according to the Toysus and Menuchos, that the ratio was 3x6, it could be that so long as it maintains the same ratio, there's the problem. By changing the shape, it doesn't matter. Now this is a mulzechnish gewesen, as a visa gewesen in the Beis Hamikdash. And therefore, it's not a raya in the Beis Hamikdash. This is the raya that it was. Were it to be round, it wouldn't be rounded in the shul. And that's why Dafke it's made in this particular way.
You're already changing them by writing on Oichi Hashem and Loyiya and that sort of thing, those little quotes on the language.
So I'll say this. Pinaki Fisher answers further and says, remember that Chazal tell us that seemingly Ases Hadibris took a much bigger center point once upon a time, and they changed it, they applied to Aromis Saminim. Because during Baal Shani, various of the sects, which ultimately became part of Christianity and others, put too much emphasis on the Ases Hadibris as if this is the only part you have to keep and nothing else. And Chazal, therefore, Mamasak, not to say part of davening, and moved it out of it. So Pinaki Fisher writes that it could be also part of this Nekida that we change it so as to a certain extent, not to diminish Chodila, but to put it in a place where we're not trying to copy the Luchos, we're putting it as far as it can be to remove the Gedank that this is the central point of the Torah. We look at the 16 and 30 mitzvahs all as one. Another idea as to how we ended up with the circle comes from geometry. If you ever look at a painting of a road, you'll notice that artists will always paint the road in such a way that in the bottom of the picture it is this wide, and as it goes up towards the end of it, it sort of angles upwards. Now why is that? Because whenever you look at a rectangular, which is far enough, there's always perspective distortion. It always seems the closer part is wider, and further up it becomes angled, it becomes almost a trapezoid. This trapezoidal effect that recurs from looking at an item, you can see that if you look up from the luchos, from the bottom, it would seem to your eyes as if the luchos angle upwards. It's not so. But the reason why things are painted this way is because that's how it looks to the human mind. You can always look, if you look up into the horizon, you get the same sense of feeling from anything which is square, the angle starts to go upwards as it goes further away from you. So it could be that the luchos were painted from the perspective of how we look when we see it from the top, look up to a mountain, where the upper part is more angular to the bottom part. This can sound. Another explanation is that if you look in some of the original prints where it was first painted as rounded, you'll notice that the luchos are painted in square, and then there's like a keser above it, a crown. And over time, that crown became incorporated into the shape of the luchos himself, but it's never meant to be represented that way. It's a luach with a crown above it. In the old medrash, you can see in the shabla, this is how it's done, and you can almost see over the generations how the crown becomes less and less prominent and more integrated into the actual shape of the luchos themselves. So, let us summarize. There's much more to say, but let's summarize of what we've learned today. You open a Gemara, you see the luchos were in either a rectangular shape or square shape, depending like the Bavli or the Yerushalmi, towards the Samilchot of Tzadik Tes. Furthermore, in the Sigya of the Uran, where the Gemara tries to make a cheshm, where things come in and out, similarly the Gemara took on Bepashtus, there's no space, everything fits perfectly, because otherwise you wouldn't need two tefachim to be able to take out the Sefer Torah. Against that, what we have simply is a long-standing Masorah that the Luchos always painted in this way. We cannot bring a raya from the Shavlat of Sfurim, but nevertheless, so many shuls had it this way. So what's the pshat for them? So we came up with several explanations. One is, this mistake happened slowly because it was part of the Keser. Number two, it is a perspective which you see when you get the Luchos, and it happened slowly until they became permanent in the shape. Number three, it represents the first Luchos, the luchos which came from Hashem, to which we have a raya that is not Amir ibn Vibriya, and potentially the shape that we have now is a combination of the two luchos. The luchos that we have with Moshe made in square, which the Gemara Bava refers to, and the first luchos which we talk around it, which the Gemara doesn't talk about at all. Whatever the case is, we know that the upper part of the luach is representative for us. Rav Moshe Shapiro used to say that if you take the two luchos together and place them at right angles, sort of imagine a luach where the upper part is I'll try to show you this way. You put the two luchos, the upper part around and the bottom part here, it forms the shape of a heart. Imagine the luach this way, then you put the other part of the luach in the other direction, you have the heart shape, because the bottom of the luchos form together. Moshe Peir used to say that Klal Yisrael wanted to show visually the idea that it says in Mishli, Kozvam Aliach Libechu. The Luchos is not just a stone, not just sapphire. It's the heart of Klal Yisrael. This is the Yisod of what lies within every single yid, the tzibi of Hashem, monoch Hashem elakechu, that we heard from Hashem. And the shape of the luach is not representative of what Muslim is HaMikdash, is representative of what our heart says. And finally, we have the story of Rabbi Yaakov Fisher and Rabbi Nasha Klein, who both say it is round because Dafka Muslim HaMikdash was square, and we want to do different than Muslim HaMikdash, as we do with the menorah and everything else, to show that this is representative, but not the actual luchos themselves. Yasha Koyach.
Very fascinating.
Okay, so since the Rebbe spoke about the middle part of the Seder, I will go back to the beginning of the Seder, and we'll speak about the first starting pusik, Vayish Ma'isoy, Ayis Kol Asher Us Hashem Nesua. So Rashi says the Mashmi Ashum Aibu, what did he hear that he came? And Rashi says that there were two things, Kiyas Yamsev, Lachem Samulek, the splitting of the Yamsev and the war with Amulek. Why specifically these two? Because the splitting of the Yamsev was probably the greatest revelation Klal Yisrael ever witnessed. Also, Shivchu al Hayom, Ma'ashel Eru Yecheskut Ben Buzi, famous Chazal. So this was the ultimate experience in Yudias Hashem. But on the flip side, this didn't stop them very shortly afterwards for asking such a fundamental question: Hayayish Hashem Bekirbayin Yemayin. Have we got a God amongst us, or haven't we got? Really remarkable thing. Just saw 10 makas, you just saw the splitting of the Yamsev, phenomenons which are completely, how to say, turning nature around the 300, it doesn't make sense. How can you, how does that work? How do you reconcile these two things? But there is a famous Ramban. It's brought down in Kedushas Levi on Piram, actually, but I haven't found it inside, which says on the Pusik, which says, Matu iri matis oiriri eswa havu atche terpots. To, so to speak, awaken and to invigorate the love, atche terpots. But he's got to play on the words of atche terpots, which means belushen chefetz. If you don't want the love to dissipate, you have to create something tangible out of it. A chefetz, do something. And that explains the words of Rashi when Rashi says, but mash miyai shuma ibu, that the resolve of Yisroel was to pick himself up and move away from the comfort zone of his home in a very, how to say, important and influential position as Kohen Midian, as the priest of the town, of the country. And he went to a barren wilderness to join a nation who have got more lofty aspirations. Now this is in Rav Shemshon Pinkus' Sefer, I found on Chanukah a phenomenal story. He had the Shabbos there of Shabbaton for Baal Tshuva. And since he went to Eretz Yisrael for this Shabbaton, the people who were present there were highly intellectual people. And one of them was a doctor. When he'd finished his presentations, the doctor who lived in Los Angeles told him a story. I want to share with you something. What was it? So he said, you know, when I was a junior and I was learning, and of course they placed me in the hospital at an early hour, so that my job was always frequently to do the night shift, which is an uncomfortable thing, but on the radio they told me from the ambulance that it's got a jogger they found who obviously overdid it, and he had a cardiac arrest. They found him and they put him in the ambulance, and it appeared that in the ambulance they already recognized that he was he's gone, lifeless. But they brought him to the hospital. The doctor was there. They tried to resuscitate him. Habruche Levatule. They covered him over and they left this young doctor who was speaking about to fill out the paperwork. As he's doing what the necessary documentation, he sees that there's a twitch from under the sheet. He said, it must be in his imagination. Then, a few moments later, again, there's a twitch of a foot, a movement. He uncovers the body, and he sees the fellow with his eyes open, looking directly into his. The fellow looks at him and starts to speak, and he says to him, "Are you Chaim Meir?" Now, the doctor was absolutely bowled over because there was no one that called him by that name except his grandmother. Even his father called him Barry. And he answered in the affirmative, "Yes." "Do you wear tefillin?" "No." He looks at him and stares him in the eyes. "Do you keep kosher?" "No." And then the man, lying there on the table, stares at him and says, "Well, then it's time to start." Closed his eyes, and that was the end of the episode. The doctor had shared this story with Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus. If you care to check it up in his cipher on Chanukah, it's exactly like that. The doctor then went into the coffee room where the other senior doctors were there, and he told them what happened, and they said to him, "You know, Barry, you need to get some sleep." He says, "I'm telling you, I just witnessed it." Yes, Barry, it's time for you to go home. You're not really up to it tonight. Forget about the documentation. Somebody else will take over." And he could see that he's not getting anywhere. He just went mid through the night. And Rabbi Pinkus asked the doctor, "Do you know, it's many years since this episode has occurred. Are you telling me that you saw a man uncovered from a sheet and starts to speak to you, calls you by your name and asks you such pertinent questions, and until now you've done nothing about it?" So the doctor shrugged his shoulders with some element of embarrassment. And then Rabbi Pinkus said afterwards, now he understands what it means. Mash mia shuma ibu. The stress in Rashi is not that he heard about Kriyas Yamsiv, not that he heard about Milchemes Emulek. He heard about phenomena which far defy nature. But at the end of the day, many people would have heard it across the road. Shomayam Mirguzin, Chinuch Hazyosh Pelushes. It didn't make a ha'porth of difference to any of them. But Yisroel said, "No, I am going to act on it. And I'm going to leave my comfort zone, join Klal Yisroel, and to be Mekabel Torah with them." Shabbos. Wow.
Rashi is saying what he heard.
Huh?
Rashi is saying what he heard, and the pasuk says that what did he hear that made him come? That's what Rashi is saying. What made him come? He heard things. Now everybody heard. But what did he hear that made him want to come?
Right, okay, good, thank you.